Our next guest on the program has conquered all forms of media, from television, his own shows like Comedy on the Road, Bizarre. He was a regular on Soap, appeared on Get Smart, countless appearances doing his comedy work, from Ed Sullivan to Merv Griffin, The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and more. He has done films. He's been on Broadway with Nathan Lane. One of the most talented and funny people in the business, actor, comedian, and impressionist, John Biner joins us. He's got a brand new memoir out called 5 Minutes, Mr. Biner, and we are so happy to have him with us this afternoon. John, thanks for being with us. How are you?
Good. All set to talk to you.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate you making some time for us today.
I appreciate you asking me to do so.
Well, I've been a fan for a long, long time, and the book is just delightful. It's a Well, as you point out, it's not a tell-all. It's a very positive look back at your career.
Yeah, that's for sure. I got lots to tell all, but I don't want to bother anybody with that.
Well, you tell the story of your childhood, and your family moved an awful lot. Was it that ability to make people laugh that helped you make it easier to be accepted in new surroundings?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The family, as I say in the book, is fun. My father was funny, and Mom was funny, my sisters and brothers are funny, and all that. And it was just one of those things. I was able to do these voices and break that wall that you always have when you move in, when you get into a school that's already in progress, and all the kids know each other for years already. And, you know, it's kind of tough, but with the voices, it made it a lot easier.
Well, it was your impression of JFK that really opened some doors for you, Well, Maine's own Von Meter, who became quite famous for his Kennedy impression, the first family album, was in the audience when you did that in competition?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we became friends. And he came over to me after the whole thing was over that night. And he said, "Hey, you were pretty good." And I don't say that about everybody.
Well,
yes.
Ed Sullivan certainly played a key role in your life, not only a mentor, but a friend. And I don't want to give away too much from the book, because we want people to read the book, by the way, called 5 Minutes, Mr. Biner. But can you share perhaps the whistling story?
Okay, certainly. You get right down to the crux, as they say. Well, I didn't know. I was new in the business. I was about 6 months into the business, really, a card-carrying comedian, having done a few Sullivan shows, and he invited me and several other acts to go out with him to Lake Tahoe in Nevada and do a 2-week show with him. And, you know, the trampoline artist and the singing sisters and this, that, and the other thing. And so I didn't know about the taboos and what you could and couldn't do and the superstitions that people had in show business. And, you know, like some people say, you can't put a hat on the bed or a table or that kind of thing. Well, I'm in my dressing room one afternoon, right across the hall from his in Lake Tahoe at Harris Club. And I'm shining my shoes to get ready for that evening. I had nothing else to do. And I'm whistling, and I hear from across the way. I didn't realize he was in, but his door was open to his dressing room. And mine also, and I hear from across the way, "Who's that whistling over there?" I didn't know that it was taboo to whistle in the dressing room. And a big deal. And then I can hear his manager saying, "It's Ed, it's Biner, Ed." And then there's a long pause, and then it's, "Biner, didn't you know it's not? It's not good. It's bad to whistle. It's bad luck to whistle in the dressing room." And I said, "No, I'm sorry," or I didn't say anything, I'm not sure. And then another pause, a long pause, and he said, "One more peep out of you, and I'll come over there and string you up by your red balls."
Well, he liked your impression of him. What was the key to doing a good Sullivan impression?
Well, mine was, no, Will Jordan was the first one I ever see do it, and I just had fun with it. I didn't try to look at it. I didn't put my shoulders up against my ears and you know, hunch down and all that kind of stuff and look as Will did. He got his hair slicked back. He did a whole thing, and I just like to have fun with it. You know, just and using his attitudes and that kind of thing, and you know, surprising him with some of the things that he didn't realize he did.
What role did Merv Griffin play in your career?
Merv Griffin had a show called it's one of those talent shows, you know, the Merv Griffin Talent Scouts. Talent Scouts show. Arthur Godfrey had one for years, Talent Scouts show, where people would come on and they'd claim to have discovered somebody in a nightclub or something like that, and here he is, you know, that kind of thing. Well, I was a friend of a guy named Dean Calcagno in high school, and his father knew some people in the newspaper business, and the producer of the Merv Griffin Talent Scout show, and I drove in with him one night early in my life, and I auditioned in Irving Mansfield's office. He was the producer of the show, and I became the person that the show discovered. And I did some little impressions that I did. I kicked around in my life and made my family and friends and Navy buddies laugh at. And I got to do the show, and it was a big hit. And there was a big. I think it was the New York Post who had one of those columns that he'd talk about show business and people, and he said, "Finally, talent with the scouts," you know. And he wrote about me, and I thought that was really nice, and it was a big boost. Yeah,
we're talking with John Beiner here on Downtown. His book is 5 Minutes, Mr. Beiner, written along with Douglas Wellman. I love the stories in the book about your time with Harry James. What did you learn about the business in touring with them?
Oh, it's fascinating. I mean, here I am, just a few months in the business, and just an innocent kind of guy, and I'm thrown on the bus with these old-time musicians and a few guys that were around my age, a little older than me, horn players, but most of the guys had been in the business for a long time. You know, Corky Corcoran, saxophone player, and different people. Buddy Rich, and you know, you're driving along with these guys in the bus day and night, night and day, and running in, doing a hotel one night, running in, getting your clothes done, whatever, and eating in restaurants with them along the way, and all that stuff, and I got educated real fast. Yeah, I got educated real fast.
You had a great friendship with one of my favorite entertainers of all time, and I don't think he gets enough credit when we talk about the history of late night television in particular, but Steve Allen was
oh,
such
God.
An original and such an amazing talent.
Steve Allen was amazing, exactly. He was so talented and so nice and intelligent and all the things that you like in a guy, and we became very good friends. He is a terrific fan of mine. In fact, I'd hear him quoting me on talk shows and stuff, and he'd say, "Oh, yeah, but John Beiner said," and all that kind of stuff. And sometimes my wife and I'd go out to L.A. after we'd left the big city, and we'd stay with them, and they were terrific. Janie Bird, and you know, Jane Meadows, and Steve. Yeah, terrific guy.
You also became friends with one of your heroes, James Cagney, who invited you over to his house on more than one occasion.
Yes, it was Roger Miller, my friend, my good friend Roger Miller.
Roger Miller, who we love because he made our city famous in King of the Road, Destination Bangor, Maine.
We were very close people. We were very friendly, and I was in his backyard one afternoon, having been in his neighborhood. I stopped by to say hello, and he said, "Hey, Banner, guess where we're going tonight?" His wife, Marion. And I said, "No, where's that?" He says, "We're going to James Cagney's house." You know, he'd swallow things. "We're going to James Cagney's house." And I'd say, "Well, boy, what I would just say, in passing, what I wouldn't do to meet James, oh my gosh, you know." And as a kid, I saw the movies, and, you know, James Cagney, the big hero, and Yankee Doodle Dandy, and the whole thing, and the tough guy in the movies. And so, that's all I said. And I thanked them for their beer, whatever we had that afternoon, and I left, and I'm at home, and I'm on the beach, living on the beach with my kids, and in a house, and And I'm downstairs, and they're upstairs having a little argument about some little thing. The dog is barking at them, and somebody's got the wrong shirt or whatever. They're just little kids, you know. And the phone rings, and one of them picks it up, and the next thing I know, the one that picked it up, Rosine, is leaning over. She's about 7, 8 years old. Lean over the little balcony they have upstairs, and she said, "Dad, James Cagney's on the phone." Oh my God! I shut everything down, and I grabbed the phone and, "Hello, hi, Jono, it's me, Jimmy Cagney. We're having a smoke over here, just you, me, and the boys. What do you say? Come on over." And that was the beginning of my friendship with James Cagney.
And you ended up doing Yankee Doodle Dandy for him.
Yeah, with Joe. Yeah, he had several people over that night, and Roy Clark was one of them, as I remember, and Donald O'Connor came over to me. Oh, one point, Jimmy was about 80, and he had a little cane, and he leaned on his cane, and he's looking over at me. His chin is on his hand, and his hand is on the cane, and he's sitting there. He said, "Jono, do you do Jimmy Stewart?" And I said, "Everybody does Jimmy Stewart." And at that time, Donald came over and said, "Hey, let's do a little Yankee Doodle for the old man," you know, so we did.
That's fantastic.
We had good fun.
You were on the Johnny Carson show so many times, but I was fascinated by the story of you going into his dressing room at one point and coming to the realization that you both had something in common in that you were inherently shy people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he would never know what to say to me. So one of the things that used to crack him up was my impersonation of Jessel, George Jessel, who used to do the show many years before I did it. And it was, and I pointed out some of the things that Jessel did, and which made Johnny laugh so hard. I just knew that that's all I'd have to do is a couple of words as Jessel, and he'd be on the floor. You know? So he would come into the makeup room and had little liver spots on his hand. I'm telling little secrets. But anyway, he had these, and he'd always have the girl do his hands because he'd forget to do it up in his dressing room. And he'd see me sitting there, and he'd look in the mirror at me, and I'd look back at him through the mirror, and he'd make this thing that Jessel always used to do with his lips, like he had just got through eating. You know? So anyway, I used to say, you know, like that, and that's the way he'd greet me, doing that with his lips.
And you tell the story of a memorable Tonight Show with Rosemary and friend of our show, the late Carl Reiner.
Oh yeah, no, that's a show that I think they should read about. I mean, that's a story.
Oh yeah, yeah. Save that one for the book, which by the way is called 5 Minutes, Mr. Bot.
Bringing it up because that's one of my favorite. Where the heck did that come from? In my life,
I was a huge fan of the John Beiner Comedy Hour, and I didn't know until reading the book what a talented group of writers you had, an amazing crew.
Oh, my gosh, yes, and they went off to become terrific in their own right, in their own world. And one of them, Rudy DeLuca, one of the writers, Rudy DeLuca, became a writer with Mel Brooks, and he was fascinated with the Frankenstein thing, and he wrote a thing called Transylvania 65,000. And invited me to do the movie with a lot of great people. Yeah.
And then the five seasons of Bizarre, which was such a terrific show.
Oh, that was nuts. Yeah.
I love that show. And I love reading the stories about not only working with, but your friendship with another comedy great, the late Bob Einstein, Super Dave.
Super Dave, yeah, Bob Einstein. Ooh, I never did Bob for Bob, but. But I do it from everybody else. You know. Yeah, Bob was terrific. I really loved him. He was terrific.
You also had a chance to be a part of what I think is one of the best ensembles in the history of television, that great cast of Soap.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, absolutely. And what an honor it was to be part of it. I showed up and I didn't know because I'd traveled around doing a lot of clubs and this and that, and I never had a chance to catch the show, and I didn't know. I hadn't met any of the actors, and including Billy Crystal, who did a lot of stand-up, but I never did run into him. And I went there the first day, and I didn't know anybody. I was introduced to everybody, and then when they opened the book and I read who I was supposed to be talking to, I didn't know who to look at. I didn't know who that person was in the script. And it was kind of interesting for the first couple of weeks, and pulled it together, and I did 17 shows.
Can you talk about the approach of Richard Mulligan, who was definitely a serious actor?
Yeah, he fascinated me. He fascinated me. In that we'd open the book on Monday morning. I call it the book, but it's the script. We'd open the book on Monday morning, and we'd read our parts, and we'd read, you know, as best we could, blah, 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 blah. And everybody'd be sitting around, the makeup people and the set people and everybody, sitting around these two tables that were pushed together, and the rest of them were scattered around the room in different chairs. And when we'd close the book after it was the last page, we'd close the book, and it would be time for everybody to get up and have a cup of coffee before we, as they say, put it on its feet, which means you hold the book and you say your thing, and then tell you where to stand and whatever as you do it. So everybody goes for coffee except for Richard Mulligan. He's got the book open and he's pacing back and forth, and he's doing all those things that he don't want to try to talk up and talk and he's looking at all that stuff. It was fascinating because he just worked on that constantly, and it was great.
You've done so much voiceover work through the years, but my first introduction to you as a voiceover performer was in The Amazing Ant and the Aardvark, which was work, obviously, but you were having so much fun with that, and it came through.
Well, you know, it wasn't really work. I mean, first of all, when you're doing voiceover work, you can show up in a sweatshirt and jeans, no makeup, none of that stuff. You just sit there behind this glass, and the guy's in the booth, and he's going, oh, this time, speak a little louder to the butterfly when you come in. And so I show up at the Patty Freeling and Fritz Freeling's office, and they were the producers of the Ant and the Aardvark and several other cartoons. And this was a cartoon that was shown in motion picture theaters, you know,
right,
in theaters, and shown between. Years ago, they used to do that all the time. And so before it got to television, then they played it on television. But I'm in Fritz Freeling's office, and he had seen me do a lot of voices on the Sullivan Show, since you'd mentioned it. That was the show he saw me on. And he said, I've got some characters. I'm looking for voices for them. And so I said, okay, what kind of... First, he says, I started telling me about it. Then he said, wait, I'll show you a picture. He shows me this painting of the Aardvark. And he said, now, the Aardvark is... tell you about his character. He's very certain, very serious, very very nervous. He's always out to get the ant. Always out to get the ant. He's very. He tries all kinds of things. And so he says he's very nervous. And the first thing that popped in my mind was Jackie Mason. You know, Jackie Mason talking all this time. He says, you know what I'm talking about, Mister. You know, he's talking. He's a big deal. So I think Jackie Mason. So he says, you know, that's great. That's perfect. And I said, okay, lucky first. First one I throw at him, and he likes it, you know. So that's fine. He puts that down. He says, now the ant, and he picks up the ant. And he says, now the ant is a lackadaisical kind of guy. He'd rather not do anything than, you know. So I said, lackadaisical, that's kind of like Dean Martin. You know, he used to be walked across the stage by the beautiful dancers to show him where to stop, you know, where the mark was. Okay, they'd stop. He wouldn't look for it. They'd just bring him and stop him, and that was where he stood. And that was Dean Martin. I said, how about this for the ant, you know? I think I'll just sit around here. He said, that's good. That's good. So now to Patty Freeling, he said, that's good. Next thing I know, they've called Dean Martin and they've called Jackie Mason. They got permission to do it, and we're on our way.
Also, a wonderful series that you hosted for a number of seasons. Comedy on the Road was such a unique show, a chance to see some talented comics. And I love, and you talk about it in the book a little bit, you talk about the openings were so unique and original. It was just a terrific show.
Well, thank you very much. And we had a lot of fun doing it. And that's where I met Doug Wellman. And we traveled a lot together in different towns across the country. You know, on the road really was. We were really on the road. And I tell him these stories, and one day he said to me, "Hey, if you ever want to write a book," and that stuck in my head, and so I decided one day, what the heck? So I called him, and there we go. Yeah, and I met a lot of wonderful comics and people along the way in that show, and I had a good time doing it.
Well, I have to bring up a series that I enjoyed, and it didn't have a long run, but The Practice with Danny Thomas and friend of our show, Shelley Fabre, part of that cast as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Shelley's a lovely girl. And that was a fun experience. I talk about Danny asking me to walk him out to his car.
Oh, I love that story. Save that. Read the book for that story because it's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, there's another story.
Singing with the band.
Oh, there's a great story in the book. And I don't know, maybe you can tease a little bit, but I love the story about your daughter, Sandy, and Elvis.
Oh, yeah. I was working with, I had seen Elvis, and we'd wave to each other, and we had little, you know, in the hallway kind of hellos, but, you know, we never really got to know each other. And I was working with Glenn Campbell at the Hilton Hotel. It was the Hilton International. That's where Elvis worked. And I was working with Glenn Campbell. And I got through with my opening for Glenn. And I got my kids together. It was Sandy's 10th birthday, and I had taken them to Vegas with me. And I was raising them on my own at the time. In fact, they always did. but anyway, I brought them with me, and after I collected them, and we were able to go up into the balcony because it was Sandy's birthday, and they didn't want, you know, kids yelling out in the middle of the show or something. So, but my kids didn't yell out any. Anyway, they, you know what I mean. If they had young kids, Mom, I want ice cream in the middle of somebody's stand up. You know, it's not good. We're upstairs now, and Glenn comes out, and he introduces Elvis in the audience, and we look down. We were sitting just, you know, you can look down the brass rail there and look downstairs, and there he is right under us, and the show goes on. Everything's fine. Audience applauds, and everything's great. And we go back. We sit back, and I look over one time, and there's no Sandy in the seat. And I said, "Where's Sandy?" And my son Don goes, "Look down, look down," and she's standing there talking to him, and you know, and his guys, and they had, you know, half moon seating, you know, the booth. They had these, but the booth, and his guys were sitting on one end of the, and he was there at the end, and she was sitting on his lap the next day. So the show ends, and I go upstairs, and I get the kids into, you know, and I go back and to get Sandy, and as I'm going back, I run into Elvis, and he tells me she's a real nice kid and all that kind of stuff, it didn't start out like she's a real nice kid, but you'll read about that, and she had had a picture taken with him and gone upstairs by the time I get back, you know. A lot of elevators and the crowds and all that kind of stuff.
We'll just tease it by saying that the King turned the tables on you a little bit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, yes. When I ran into him backstage in the kitchen, in fact, it was. You had to go through the kitchen to get to the elevators. You know, show business is different than the outside world. And ran into Elvis and his entourage and I had made a remark about him in my act that he'd caught earlier in his life in another room. I was working with Diana Ross, and I used to say, "You see, he paces the stage like a caged animal." and I met him at the door, and he says, "Like a staged animal, huh, Joan?" And some guys will look to me with no smiles on their faces. And I said, oh, boy. Oh, boy. And they just left without saying a word. And then he took about 8 or 10 steps and said, hey, Joan. I turned around. He said, I met your daughter, Sandy. She's real nice. And they all laughed, and I realized he would put me on. So there's the story, almost.
I love it.
All right?
What was your experience like working with Nathan Lane on Broadway in The Frogs?
Oh, Nathan, God almighty, he's amazing. I mean, the man has so many plays in his skull. I mean, long speeches and things. It's just amazing. Well, the thing that really was a big deal for me, not only to meet Nathan Lane, who calls himself Mr. Broadway, and he is, but I'd always seen a lot of Broadway shows in the movies. You get Broadway rhythm and all that Broadway stuff in the backstage, or, you know, the stage door Johnny and all this stuff that was thrown at you as you're growing up in these different shows and movies. So I always wondered what it was like, and through my career in the business, and I got an opportunity, and I met Nathan Lane and Susan Stroman, and I was in a thing that was an adaptation, and it was called The Frogs, and I was Karen, and I came down with a long white beard and long white hair, and look a little like Leon Russell. And I'd come down 35 feet from on a little skiff, all chained, chains rattling, and sing a song that Stephen Sondheim had written for my character after he had met me and watched me do my character for about 2 or 3 years, weeks in rehearsal. And he wrote this song one afternoon. I get a tap on the shoulder from Susan Stroman at rehearsal. Says, somebody wants to see you next door. And I walk in. I go, oh, Mr. Sondheim. And he goes, Steve. And it was just Steve sitting at the piano, grand piano. And he said, now, just let me hear it. I want to know where your range is and stuff. So he played some chords, and I did some. And the next thing I knew, I've got this song written for me.
Well, and you do so many great impressions of singers. And, of course, you worked with musicians all throughout your career. One of my favorite singers, I know he's one of your best friends. Could you indulge us and maybe do a little Johnny Mathis?
Well, just let me tell you. It's not for me to say you love me.
I love it. I love it. And you also worked with a friend of ours who comes on the show quite often. Now he's a neighbor of ours living down in New Hampshire, John Davidson.
Oh, John Davidson. Yeah. Yeah. We did some nice things together in different times in our lives. We worked at Harris Club around the same time together. And we did a big thing. Well, there was a big thing for Playboy, the Playboy Bunny of the Year, I think it was a big deal with Hefner and all these people, and John Davidson and I starred in the show, and we had a great time. There was a break in the show. That's a little story because one of my favorite people, Groucho Marx, was there, and he was sitting in the audience, and I had met him before that. I had met him at the Friars Club, and I had seen him standing there by himself. It was a break in the show, you know, intermission in the show that we were there to see. And I was young in the business, and I walked over. I said, "Mr. Marx, you don't know me, but I think you're terrific." He said, "Oh, I know who you. I know you. What I don't know is why someone who looks like you does what you do." He says, now think about that. That's a triple compliment. So I told that story at the Davidson, at the big thing that we were doing for Hefner. And there was a break in the equipment. They asked me to go out there and entertain a little bit. And I saw him, and he was in his, the beret period. He had a beret. And he was with Connie Stevens, who was a longtime friend of mine. He was escorting her, or vice versa, I don't know. And they were sitting there in the front row. And I told that story about meeting him and what he had said to me. and not expecting it. But after the show, I'm in my dressing room putting my stuff in the bag as you're done. You know, you're all through with this, that, and the other thing. There's a knock on the door. I open it, and it's Groucho. And he takes the cigar out of his mouth, and he looks at me, and he says, "If you were a Goyle, I'd marry you."
Well, the book is called 5 Minutes, Mr. Biner, written along with Doug Wellman, and it is full of great stories, wonderful characters, and I guess I was most impressed, John, with the fact that it was also filled with a great deal of gratitude for the life that you've been able to live for all these years.
It's just falling into place, you know, one thing falls into the other, and one door opens, another one closes, and all that kind of stuff, and all the people are friends, and that I've met along the way, and it's fantastic. It's a wonderful life, and it continues to be so.
John, that's wonderful. Thank you so much. I love the book and have been a big fan of your work for many, many years. Appreciate you carving out some time for us today.
Hey, anytime, Rich. It's been fun talking to you, and you asked some really good questions.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed your appearance with our friend Gilbert Gottfried, too. That was great.
You know, you used to do a thing that I really liked a lot.
That was wonderful. Well, John, thank you so much. Be well, stay safe, and hopefully we'll catch you again down the road.
And all the same back at you, Rich. It's been fun talking to you, and you asked some really good questions.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoyed your appearance with our friend Gilbert Gottfried, too. That was great.
You know, you used to do a thing that I really liked a lot.
That was wonderful. Well, John, thank you so much. Be well, stay safe, and hopefully we'll catch you again down the road.
And all the same back at you, Rich.
Oh, how much fun was that, huh? The great John Biner. I was trying to keep track as we went along of how many different impressions he did, and I lost count. There were so many good ones.
There had to be at least 8 or 9. At least.
It was great. So much fun. John Biner, the book is called 5 Minutes, Mr. Biner, and is available everywhere you buy terrific books like that.